Unveiling the secrets A-list copywriters use to make themselves and their clients millions. This is the Copywriters Podcast with your host, the world's greatest copywriting coach, David Garfinkel.
Our returning champion is Sam Woods, who has been using AI for business in very big ways since 2016. And that's a lot longer than most people, including me, including Nathan. And we're both big fans of AI for copywriting. But more important for today's show, we're big fans of Sam Woods. Last time he was on here, Sam gave us some highly valuable insights and hands-on tips for using AI with copywriting. But over the last 10 years, Sam has also developed his own methodologies, trainings, and frameworks for business, for building and growing online businesses in areas outside of copywriting, systems, automations, in ways you might not have imagined on the surface, and in ways you could not have even possibly imagined. So a refresher about Sam's background. He got started in machine learning in 2016, that's 9 years ago, and generative AI in 2019, that's 6 years ago. He was a pioneer in prompt engineering for AI copywriting and marketing. Sam has advised Fortune 1000 companies and teams across the world, as well as advised and consulted personally with CEOs and other C-suite executives. He describes himself as a strategic AI architect who advises C-suite leaders on turning artificial intelligence into their most powerful competitive advantage. And today he's going to share a little bit of that massive store of wisdom with us. So before we start the interview, first, let me remind you that copy is powerful and you're responsible for how you use what you hear in this podcast. And most of the time, common sense is all you need. But if you make extreme claims, and or if you're writing copy for offers in highly regulated industries like health, finance, business opportunity, you may want to get a legal review after you write and before you start using your copy. My larger clients do this all the time. Sam, welcome back, and so glad to see you.
Good to be here. Thanks for having me back. It's always good to talk to you guys.
Thanks. Well, let's start with a kind of big picture question. Especially in social media, you've been talking lately about a mindset shift away from just using prompts and more towards how AI can handle small or large portions of an entire business. Can you remember the first time when this became obvious to you and what that was like?
Yeah, I think probably end of 2020, early 21. So in 2020, OpenAI released GPT-3, at the time, the state-of-the-art model, large language model, and you could access it through API. And what we started experimenting with at the time, which took us quite a bit to figure out, like all the stuff we know now, we didn't know back then. It was all very new. And we figured out that, okay, we can basically just have GPT-3 give us output, whatever we're asking for, and it can only do so in small chunks because at the time, the context window, which is how much a model can take in and give out, was pretty small. I think at the time, maybe 4,000 or so tokens, which comes out to maybe a few hundred words, something like that. So if we wanted to have, for example, a sales page written, which is far longer than a few hundred words, or even a long form landing page, we had to do it in steps, one by one by one by one by one. And we figured out that, okay, we can actually do that. We just need to have a very long string of steps, of multiple requests to GPT-3 and then getting feedback back and then building on that to eventually produce a full landing page or a full sales page or a VSL script. And then same thing with any other kind of business task or job in a business. You could get a model to produce all the output you wanted as long as you had a long enough string of steps. And when we saw that happen in work, it was kind of mind-boggling because these models at the time, they weren't super fast, but they were faster than a human. So to have a sales page written in just a few minutes or a landing page in just a few minutes. Like, to see that happen was like, I didn't know what to think. I didn't know like how to interpret what I saw on my screen.
Sure. And what about, where did you start to see AI doing more than write copy?
Yeah, that was not too long after that. So Zapier has been around for a long time. It's just an automation tool. And when we then started figuring out how to make those same API calls from inside a Zapier flow, and not just for copy, but for problem solving, for much of other content, for sales conversations that we wanted to analyze. So we started to see that, okay, these models are, they're not thinking like humans. They don't do anything as humans do in our brains, other than they kind of function like a neural network. And our brain is in some ways similar to how a neural network functions. But they have an like uncanny ability to take any text you give it at the time. Now you can take images and more formats, but at the time it was text. So if we can just turn what we do into a written text, and if we can take an SOP, a standard operating procedure that involves text of some kind, whether that is writing emails to coworkers or writing memos or updates or agendas for meetings. So anything text, when we saw that, okay, we can get it to write any text we want, and we can turn like at the end of the day, especially if you're doing marketing, you're dealing with text at the end of the day, text posted online somewhere, you know, website, social media, emails, whatever. And it's not even copy text, it's just text of any kind. And we started to implement that into workflows, and we saw, oh wow, like this is basically replacing admin assistants to some degree, or at least you can have an admin assistant oversee AI as opposed to doing the manual labor his or herself. And from there, it just grew to further capabilities, so that now at this point, if you can string together API calls, requests, involve other software platforms in, you know, an automation, then you can have actual tasks done that doesn't just involve text, but involves getting things done inside other email marketing platforms or ad network platforms or anything that touches software at this point. So if you as a human being, if you spend 50% of your time clicking buttons inside a piece of software, most likely these models together with an automation can do that for you and do it pretty well and perhaps even better, depending on what the task is.
Are you familiar with the work of Edward Deming, or for that matter, Michael Gerber in the E-Myth? Because it sounds like that's what you're bringing to AI, like yes. A structured, disciplined approach to breaking work, you know, big W, yeah, big letters work, into a process, into steps, and then automating those steps.
Yeah. If, and this might sound, and I'll break this down, maybe it's something more tangible, but the basic heuristic that you want to have in mind is that if your job and task can be described in words, then an AI model in an automation can do it for you. And if it happens on a computer or on the internet, obviously, like as different from pushing a lawnmower, like that's, you can describe it, but so far AI can't push your lawnmower for you. Although there are little robot lawnmowers, I think, that run around your lawn, right? So we're getting there. But if your work happens on a computer with technology, on the internet, with software, and if it can be described what you do in words, then an AI model in an automation can do it. That's a basic heuristic. Does that make sense?
And that's a, yes. And that's a big if. Maybe not for you, maybe not for a lot of people, but for some people, they, you know, they've never had that meta look at what they do. And so, I mean, I'd just like to throw in here, that's going to be a big skill going forward. That's going to separate those who survive from those who are hanging on by their fingernails.
Yeah.
Let's get this down to very tangibles. Let's say for one of our listeners, they're juggling client work and marketing, right? Mm-hmm. They got to market themselves and they got to do client work. What would you say is the first place they should look at using AI to automate one piece of their business?
The good news and the bad news is that you could start really anywhere. And what I would do first is I would look for a group of outcomes and a series of tasks that you do to achieve the outcome, whatever that might be, and see what parts of that can be put together in an automation with AI. And so by that, I mean, let's say you're a copywriter, because we're talking about copywriting on this podcast, and yeah. Market research might be a big piece of what you do, right? You have a product that you're writing copy for, whatever the copy is, and you need to do market research, product research, probably competitive research, and to see what other offers out there are competing with yours or for your client. You can automate a lot of tedious market research without losing the kind of information that copywriters tend to look for, like ideas for big ideas and very particular mechanisms for delivering a feature or a benefit and stories and market chatter and market language. So you can gather all of that and essentially have AI do a repetitive task. Let's say you start a project for a client, and let's say you're writing for an anti-snoring device, some kind of mouth guard that you put in your mouth, and it's meant to stop you from snoring. Well, you can have AI tools and automations do all the research around the product, around competitors, and around what the market is saying, specific segments, right? So you can either do this semi-manually, where you're kind of triggering the tools to do the work for you, or you can, if you have the time and capabilities, you can put together a Zapier or a Gumloop or a Lindy.ai automation. But the process is the same whether you do it manually or a tool does it. You can set it up so that all you have as a potential starting point, trigger point, is that you have a form that is only accessible to you, where you input the product name. Maybe there's a product URL that there's more information about the product on a page. And then you put in like basic value propositions, and you describe the market that it's for, a particular segment or more. And then if you know of competitors, you have a field that's just a text field. You say, my competitors are, you know, A, B, and C and L, M, N, O, P. So you can have a simple starting point form that acts like an intake of just basic information about the research that you want done. And then you press submit on that form, and then behind the scenes, different AI tools do different kinds of research. So I would use, for example, Perplexity, which is an excellent deep research tool. And I would say the deep research functionality with Perplexity is better than the deep research functionality inside ChatGPT or Claude, simply because they pull from other resources, other databases, and other sources for its searches, and it does a better job pulling it, evaluating it, and then giving it to you. But the point is, whether it's an automation or you do this manually, Perplexity, and you should pay for the pro version, which is about $20 a month, because it's a workhorse of a tool that can do probably $2,000 worth of research for $20 a month. And you just describe what your product is. You describe the market segment that it's for. You describe who the competitors are. And then you can select in deep research for Perplexity, you can select the sources you wanted to go hunting in, like the web in general, academic journals and texts, and also like things people say on social media, different platforms on social media. And then you press enter, and it'll do the deep research that you would do. And it'll probably take you several hours to several days of researching, finding, pulling the information, putting it into some kind of document so you collect what you're looking for, all the things that you need. But then deep research will prepare a report of all the things you asked for. So if you can just describe, like you're describing to a research assistant, the kind of information that you're looking for, the kind of nuances that you need, and like specifically call out and say, I'm looking for unique ideas, compelling ideas, development or news that could be used as a big idea for the copy that I'm writing. So it's like you're giving this to a junior copywriter / researcher. You tell them what you're looking for. You say, look for these things, look for that, do these sources. But the tool itself, deep research with Perplexity, does all the labor of finding it. And it'll take anything from a few minutes to maybe sometimes 10, 15 minutes, but it'll go find it all. It'll put it into a report for you. It'll have all the links. And if you ask for quotes from what it's finding, then it'll provide you like quotes from maybe what people are saying. So it'll have everything done for you in less than 10 minutes. And then you as a copywriter, you would take that, you can export it into your Google Drive if that's what you use. And now you have a complete research brief that covers all the aspects of what you want done, and it's done for you. So you can do it manually by prompting it, or you can put together an automation string that all you do is give it that initial input. The tool does all the work. It also puts it into a Google Drive folder for you if that's your selected output format. And then you can start building on that research, and then you go, okay, now I have the brief, all the research. Now I need to analyze the research brief that I got and select and identify, let's say, like five potentially big ideas or five different themes or four potential headlines that I could use in a sales page. So you can just string together the work that you do as a copywriter when it comes to taking information, looking at information, analyzing it, and then categorizing it into different aspects of the copy you want done. And then that's just a series of steps that gets added to the initial research phase. And the tools are simple to use to do so. Does that make sense, David?
Oh, it makes a lot of sense. You know, as you were saying that, I was thinking of, you know, when I first started my career and I got a job as a reporter on a trade magazine in New York, and I had this, wasn't really an uncle, but he was like an uncle, and he said, David, you are one of the 500. Apparently there were 500 people in Manhattan that were anointed as geniuses because we were hired as writers, right? And and I was also thinking there were, you know, many situations where I was with editors or other writers where they would say, you know, writing's a mysterious process. Either you got it or you don't. You can't be taught. And, you know, there's in every lie, there's a kernel of truth, right? But I mean, what I think is really important for people to take away from what you just said, which was brilliant and useful and so clear, what's really important is that the magic that we as copywriters do is not everything we do. It's a certain portion of the process. And if you can outsource or automate the portions that aren't magical, that don't add to you know, the creative work you do, that actually opens up more space in your mind and your ethos to create better offers, better hooks, better big ideas.
Yeah. There's always labor involved in what you do, whether it's mental labor or just clicking buttons or something else, right? Typing on a keyboard. And I know that for some copywriters, they love the research aspect and they want to do that more than other things. And that's fine. Like you don't, just because you can automate and outsource the research aspect doesn't mean you have to. But maybe like this is why AI is incredible in this sense, is that however you want to work, you can work that way and have AI handle a lot of other stuff. So if you love the research aspect and all you do is want to prepare that brief that AI could do, but then you give the brief to like a junior AI copywriter who then analyzes it and picks out and maybe does the first draft or two of the copy that you're trying to write. And then you come in as the copy chief when AI has drafted the copy and you act as a copy chief and you make edits and you give feedback and you make changes and you rewrite or whatever you do as a copy chief, right? So just because you can outsource parts of it doesn't mean you have to. I think we're in a unique place in at least recent history where AI and technology can happen on our terms in the way we need it to work, as opposed to us having to adjust to what tech can or cannot do. That has been the story so far. But there's a new story now. There's a new narrative, which is AI can adapt and adopt to your preferred way of working, and it can handle labor that you don't necessarily like or want to do, and you choose what you want to do.
I'm just going to jump in real quick and add, for every aspect from market research to going through and testing to make sure my transitions are flowing properly or making sure that it's punchy or making sure that all of the different aspects of my business, I have AI tools built for each one, even the ones that I like doing, because it's always good to have a second pair of eyes.
Yeah.
And so what I've seen is jobs that used to take me a month to be able to deliver on, I'm able to deliver on in a week, less than a week now. And it doesn't mean I'm not doing anything. It just means that I, and David, you guys were talking about this earlier, being able to describe what it is that you do. You understand what it is. You're able to describe it. You can have AI basically become a duplicate version of you and get what you want, the way that you want it, 4, 5, 10 times faster.
Yes,
absolutely. And it's almost like it's more freedom and flexibility than a lot of people can handle when they first, right? It takes some time to sort it out. You know, you said in a tweet on Twitter X just last week, and this caught my eye, you said that AI systems should run 24/7 like an invisible staff. Could you talk about that?
Yeah. So obviously these models don't fatigue and they don't need to eat or sleep or do anything. And which also means that it can perform tasks and work that were previously constrained because as a human being, you do need to sleep and you do need to eat and you can only work for so long in a day and be effective for so long in a day, right? But these systems don't have those limitations. And so they're without getting philosophical about this, but in some sense, they're doing cognitive labor that humans do. Writing, and it mimics thinking. It obviously doesn't think the way a human does, but it mimics reasoning. And it does so pretty well and accurately. So a human doing cognitive mental labor that might look like clicking things as well in a piece of software, these systems can do so without fatiguing, without running out of steam, without running out of energy, and they can just keep going. Which means that, like, just take a silly scenario, but if you as a copywriter get a project and the project is to write 100 emails, you know, it's going to take you, I don't know, 30 days, longer, shorter, like give or take 3 or 4 weeks, plus minus however many days, depending on your skill set.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And you would do so in like 8-hour increments per day. Over time, generally speaking, maybe you're only effective for four hours, but you can basically string together an automation that's not too many steps that can do all 100 and do 1,000 emails overnight for you. So you wake up to a Google folder filled with 100 emails done for you. That's still a lot of emails for you to review. So you can have an AI system review it for you and score it and evaluate it based on criteria that you give it. So you tell an AI what to look for, what to pay attention to, and how to evaluate the copy that was just written. And then maybe you say, like, give me the 10 strongest and give me the 10 weakest. And then it'll give you those 10 strongest and weakest. And you as a human, you go in and you check the work and you make sure, like, okay, yeah, these are indeed the strongest or the weakest emails. So it's the capacity to do mental labor of some kind, without getting philosophical, is going to mean that you, even though you could write 100 emails, should you really write 100 emails? Do you even need an AI to write 100 emails? Because we all know that, sure, there is value in quantity of output. But at the same time, who has time to read 100 emails? Like, it takes time to read 100 emails. It takes time to write them. It takes time to edit them. So we're going to see this, I think, over the next few months and probably a couple of years, we're going to keep seeing this just confusion over what is our work, what is counted as labor, how valuable is it, like where is the value in the labor itself? Like you as a copywriter, what value do you provide? Is it like the paradox with copywriting is that the words matter and they don't matter at the same time. Right, you can write really shitty copy, and so who cares? It's not converting. And then you can write really good copy, and it converts. So the words matter, but they also don't matter at the same time. So it's like this paradox. It's like almost like a dilemma. And so you, as a copywriter, like, what's the value that you can uniquely provide, or provide in a way that's better than others? And the words are still going to have to be there, but maybe you're the one who identifies the big ideas, and then you have an AI system produce all the copy in a package for you.
Yeah. I mean, what I'm hearing as a common thread through what you're saying is, one, you need to identify what you want to do and what you don't want to do and what you want AI to do and what you don't want AI to do. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that requires stretching your imagination a little more than you have in the past. And also, we kind of want to reevaluate the definition of work a little bit as copywriters, mm-hmm. and I guess as everyone else. In terms of the area of automation of tasks, and maybe customizing our individual work process and flow even more personally, where do you see this going in the next few years?
Yeah, I think there are multiple options for where this is going. I think one of the more likely opportunity or option is, so at this point now, and I think this is alluded to a little bit earlier by Nathan, you can essentially create a somewhat of a clone of yourself together with AI now. And it just depends on what kind of memory you give it, what kind of knowledge you give it, and how much of you give it, and how much of your personality and way of working and so on that you provide to the AI model or tool. But you can basically create a clone of yourself, more or less. And that's only going to become more common and more feasible and more possible for most people to do, where I absolutely see a future where if I wanted to do this, I could make a sandwich AI that's a copywriter that is entirely run as an AI system that takes on clients, takes on projects, takes on work, produces the work, delivers the work, but it's all handled by an AI. And it's done with my unique spin view or whatever you want to call it. My fingerprints is on the copy that's produced because it mimics me. But me as a person, I'm probably sitting on a beach somewhere, sipping on a drink. And this dream we've had, many people have had, of you sitting on a beach or doing something relaxing, and then technology does your work for you. Like, that dream is becoming very, very real. It's possible to do now to a large degree, but it's only that tech is only going to become easier, more capable, so that I think most of the work online or done by the technology, I think it's entirely possible that we just have clones of ourselves to do the work for us, and then we do other things, whatever those other things might be.
Pretty compelling and exciting and maybe a little scary future, huh?
Yeah, definitely. It's thrilling and terrifying at the same time.
Boy, that's a lot. Nathan, do you have anything you want to add or jump in?
Yeah, I'll just say that a year ago, 2 years ago, I was very intimidated by AI. Mm. And I was like, Chicken Little, the sky's falling. Oh my gosh, what's this going to do? After working with it for the last year and a half, almost 2 years now, I don't really have that sense anymore. I still see some of the dangers. I still see some of the unanswered questions around it. But I have a very positive outlook on where AI is going, how it's going to help us, how it's going to affect the entire economy. I have no idea. But in my world, I'm enjoying the ride. So I just wanted to kind of end it on a positive note.
Yeah, I think used well, used properly, it can unlock a lot of value, a lot of benefits. But because it has that potential for a lot of good, it also has, unfortunately, the potential for a lot of bad. What is going to come down to is, how do you use it? To what extent do you use it? And how that happens for everyone else. So I think the future is open to me. The future is very positive to me. I think there's going to be a lot of good things happening. I think we'll have some negatives along the way, which is always how it turns out. But I think ultimately, I think we're looking at a very interesting, fascinating, and a very positive future.
I would say a net positive. I mean, human beings have this uncanny ability to screw things up when given the opportunity. Yeah. So I'm sure we will. But I think there's more positive. And, you know, I've certainly shifted. I mean, Nathan can testify to that. I was like, AI and copywriting, you know. but I certainly see it different now.
I'm going to end the show like this. Sam, thank you so much for coming on, man. My journey on this has been very influenced by you. I've been following you on Facebook for years, and you were one of the first people that, watching your posts, I was like, okay, I need, this guy's talking about some stuff I need to take seriously. And so you were one of the motivating factors for me to dive into it earlier on than most copywriters were getting into it. So thank you for that. You don't post as much on Facebook as you used to. So if people do want to connect with you, follow you, find you, where's the best place to keep up with what you're doing?
Oh, man. I'm probably more active on X/Twitter than anywhere else. I do keep up with some LinkedIn stuff, even though not super much. So I think if you want to just like see stuff from me every week, multiple times a week, probably either X or LinkedIn is probably the best. And then obviously my website, samueljwiz.com. That's kind of where I have some repositories of stuff and also links to other things that might interest you. So those are probably the best places to check me out.
Nice. We'll make sure to put links in the show notes for this episode over at copywriterspodcast.com. Sam, thank you so much, man, for coming on again. And hopefully we can get you on again in the very near future, because I've got more and more questions that I want to ask as well.
Sure. Anytime. And thanks so much for having me on again. It's been, as always, a pleasure.
Heck yeah. All right.
Thank you. And you're welcome.
Copywriterspodcast.com is the best place to find show notes and other episodes. And until next time, we will catch you later.
Catch you there. Hey, if you enjoyed today's podcast, be sure to subscribe, rate, and review on your favorite podcast app so we can get into ears of more listeners. Thank you.